We now return to WCHL's 2013 Chapel Hill Town Council Candidates Forum. Once again, here's your moderator, Aaron Keck.
Welcome back to our Chapel Hill Town Council Candidates Forum. Again, thank you to all 9 candidates this year in the race for Chapel Hill Town Council. Again, just to go around the table and introduce them once again, George Ciantiolo, Sally Green, Ed Harrison, Lauren Hintz, Gary Kahn, Paul Niemi, Maria Palmer, Amy Ryan, and D.C. Swinton. Thanks again to all the candidates for being with us today. We're going to continue right now with the second hour of this forum, and we're going to focus for most of the rest of the time on questions related to development. And for the next 3 questions, once again, I'll randomly select 3 candidates each out of this fun little cup we have here. You'll have 2 minutes apiece to respond, and then we'll open the floor for 5 minutes for all the candidates to weigh in. Once again, candidates, during that discussion period, please limit your individual comments to 30 seconds each, but you will have multiple chances to weigh in if you want. So for this next question, we will turn it to Lauren Hintz, George Ciantiolo, and Gary Kahn. As Chapel Hill 2020 is implemented, what should the town council's role be in overseeing the development process, and how will you ensure that residents' interests are represented? Beginning with Lawrence.
Well, I think we're seeing a good beginning, and I think the short term is just look at the different types of meetings which have been held, which have citizens in generally thought worked really well, which ones have they thought didn't work as well, and of course use the ones which worked better. The other issue associated with that is I think we should continue to use more in-house facilitators and try to reduce the amount of consultant fees that we have to pay. Finally, to continue carefully listening to everyone. And, of course, council has to make a judgment call on what makes the most sense for the entire community.
George Ciantiolo.
Well, what we heard in Chapel Hill 2020 was citizens said they wanted more commercial development to soften the effects on taxes. And I think one of the things council has to do and has begun doing is revising the land use zoning ordinances to make them to give clarity to both applicants and citizens alike, and they're also considering revising the review process to make a review process that's more efficient. And I think in revising the land use zoning ordinances, one of the things that's being considered and obviously is being tested with the Ephesus Church small area plan is a form-based a code system or a hybrid of it, because I'm not sure that what we'll eventually adopt will be the same as other communities have necessarily adopted. But I think what citizens need to keep in mind is that form-based code uses citizens' participation. It's based on going to the citizens, asking what they want to see, what kind of mass they want to see, what kind of heights, what kind of setbacks. The one thing it does not provide is design, and that's something I think that Chapel Hill will look at in terms of how what kind of a form-based code we might devise would be one that might allow for consideration of design. The other thing is consideration of affordable housing. Most form-based codes do not necessarily include affordable housing, but certain communities have included that as part of their process. So I think that's something we'll need to look at. But again, all of this will involve citizen involvement before anything is adopted. And I think that's the critical thing to keep in mind. It's keeping in the Chapel Hill 2020 process.
Gary Kahn is next. Before I turn to you, we're going to get back to the question of form-based codes in a minute. Could you just say a word about the difference between form-based coding as opposed to the process we've currently been using?
Well, the form-based code sets it basically tells the applicants what's expected for an area, so that you basically have a checklist that they can come in and say, I'm doing this, 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 and this, and therefore they meet the requirements for an area. And that's what scares people off, is the fact that there isn't further review. But I think that can be done in terms of what hybrid we might adopt. We can get some of that further review in.
And we'll turn to that in a couple of questions. Gary Kahn.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm happy you asked this question. I've been attending various committee meetings around town, Central West, Obi Creek, as you know, I'm involved in the Fordham Ephesus Church area. And George is not probably going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. It boils down to what sounds good on paper doesn't necessarily work, and the Central West Committee actually has proved that. It's hard for them to disagree on issues. So I have to say that, you know, it sounds great, but I think it's come to the point where you can't satisfy everybody, and it's going to be more and more issues, because I'm finding out more and more people are getting disillusioned with the process. They're calling it a farce, as one person said a few weeks ago.
All right, George Cianciolo first with follow-up, then Maria Palmer.
Well, I'm going to disagree with Gary, because the Central West Committee, which Amy is co-chair on, has adopted a plan which they're presenting tomorrow night to the Planning Board for the second time. And the issues that were voted on were adopted by a vote of a supermajority. And not everyone's going to agree in this town. And I think when you get a supermajority, people have to accept the fact that the majority often rules.
Maria Palmer?
I think the proof that the process is working is that some people feel unhappy, but they had a say. They participated, they were part of the group that made the decisions, and of course you cannot satisfy everybody, Gary. I think you're right there, but that doesn't... Oops. So, do I start over? I'm sorry. Okay. I think saying that you cannot satisfy everybody is true, Gary, but that doesn't mean the process doesn't work. In fact, compromise, everybody feels like they gave a little bit, but it's the only way that parties that started out disagreeing can come to a resolution, and that's how we do business. That's politics, and it's not a dirty word. You know, it's the allocation of resources. And I think that these focus groups are doing a tremendous job of involving the communities and hearing everybody. And yes, like Lauren said, we have to save some money and we have to find the resources in-house, maybe hire some people who are very competent in doing this.
Amy Ryan and then Ed Harrison.
Yeah, processes are contentious, but I think that having that dialogue and getting everybody to the table and inviting everybody in to talk about these issues is what's really important. Not everybody will agree. As George said, our group has made all of our decisions by a supermajority vote, so there is a substantial majority of the people on that group are feeling actually very confident about this plan and think it's a great solution for the area. And I think it's really important that we sit down and we have these conversations all over town, and they are not going to be easy. There are trade-offs to make, and there are many different stakeholder groups to look at. But it's important that everybody is involved and invited to the table to have that conversation.
Ed Harrison, then Gary Kahn, Lauren Hans.
Council as a whole has had a pretty light touch on implementation of 2020 so far. We just simply let the process move with two focus areas. That's where the attention has been. And I will say one step, and we'll have to finish one or more focus areas to do this, would be the council asking for an examination, a candid examination of what worked and what has not worked so far in that process.
Going back to the Central West, actually they had some members of the committee and one gentleman had a proposal, an alternate plan. And basically, a lot of those people who presented that plan felt that their voice wasn't really being heard, and I think in a way it just created more problems as far as the Central West, you know, committee was concerned. And I think it's totally has they're not listening.
Just one way which I think the some of these committees could improve is there's a tendency for committee members to want information, and it's not provided in a timely fashion, and so issues like how is stormwater going to be handled or traffic or things like that information isn't made available or might not even be able to be available. So some members are frustrated because they don't have that information in a timely fashion.
Amy Ryan.
I'd like to get back to what Ed was talking about. I think it's critical that as we do these processes, we do these kind of postmortems on them and say what worked, what didn't, because I would really like to see the town adopt a template for this kind of process to say, okay, when you want to do a small area plan or something, this is how you do it. This is how you set up a committee. These are the steps that you go through. This is the kind of facilitation you have. So I think that will make it easier. Some of what happens at Central West is we had a lot of issues about process. So I would love to see the town find a process that really works for us and adopt it as policy.
Do you think it should be the same process for each of the focus groups?
I don't think it can be. I think that there'll be slight differences, but I think that there can be kind of a template, a large scale template that would work for them all.
Maria Palmer.
And I think when we do that, we will realize that if we want participation of certain segments, we have to do things differently. For example, we couldn't get somebody from public housing to be come forth and be counted, be part of the committee. Well, those folks may need financial assistance to be able to participate in 30 meetings, including babysitting money, including transportation money. So the council needs to look at, if we want equity, then maybe we need to pay attention to the details.
Follow-ups on that? Sally Green.
Would you mind repeating
the original question?
I think
yeah.
Matt is sort of drifting
yeah.
on that.
It's been a while. As Chapel Hill 2020 is implemented, what should the town council's role be in overseeing the development process, and how will you on the council ensure that residents' interests are represented?
Okay. The one point that hadn't been addressed that I wanted to just briefly mention is there's been some concern that we've got too much going on at one time. But if you remember the fact that at any given time, a landowner has the right to bring something forward to the council under whatever zoning exists and to ask for a project, it makes sense. And if we want to really plan the town in advance, it makes sense to try to do these concurrently to the best that we can so that we can get these plans on the ground and have those expectations set.
All right. And Amy Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Sally's premise that we do have people queuing up for development and we want to get this done. But I've seen people just exhausted from trying to get to different meetings who could only follow one process. I haven't been to as many of the Rosemary Imagined things as I would like to. The one I went to, I loved. And it's just I've had too many other conflicts. So it makes it hard for people who want to be involved in it to be involved broadly.
All right. Next question. Again, candidates who are selected to answer this one, you'll have 2 minutes to respond and then 5 minutes to open the floor. This one will go to D.C. Swinton, Paul Nebe, and Ed Harrison. What can the town do to attract more business and retail to Chapel Hill, and what is the right kind of business and retail that we want to attract? D.C. Swinton.
Well, I think by improving our transit system would be a very paramount, so that way people that would go to these new businesses would be able to get to and from work. But we also need to attract businesses that will pay a living wage. We can't continue with just 725 jobs, and even when people work full-time with 725 jobs, they're barely making the poverty rate of $11,490. And that's not going to be a wage that cuts it in Chapel Hill, considering how high the cost is to live here. So I would definitely want to go about looking throughout the country, finding various businesses that are looking to relocate and or even expand into the Chapel Hill area, find ways to create tax incentives that would get them here, but not permanent tax incentives that would cause a diminishing amount of revenue for the town in the long run. And I think those would be the best ways to do it. We have to make sure that anything that comes in offers not just 5 or 10 jobs, but 100, 200, things like that.
Paul Nebe.
The question was, what can the town do to attract more business to Chapel Hill?
Mm-hmm. And what's the right kind of business we want to attract?
What's the right kind of business? Okay, I think there's basically two kinds of businesses. There's commercial, and then there's other businesses, such as what I would call clean industry, research, IT, Google, Amazon, those kind of businesses. We need a lobbyist or someone on the town staff to really go out and see what do these companies need and why would they come to Chapel Hill, and what can we provide for them and sell them on Chapel Hill. I think a really great place for this right now is where the Blue Cross Blue Shield building is. That would be a great place for a clean industry, IT, somebody like Google, Facebook, any of those people. Of course, they've already got their places, but maybe somebody new. Also, for as far as commercial goes, I would like to be able to buy what I need in Chapel Hill without having to go to Durham or the neighboring Chatham counties. If I need a new TV, I have to go to Durham or look online. And maybe I'm missing something here, but I don't know of an electronic store in Chapel Hill. If I need to buy a new mattress or something like that, I have to go outside of Chapel Hill, and I'd like to see those places brought to Chapel Hill so that we can reduce our carbon footprint when we go shopping for those things.
Ed Harrison.
Okay, I'll start by saying you learn after many years on council that there are no simple answers, or not very many. One thing we can do, and Dwight Bassett has been doing this for some years now in Chapel Hill, is doing just what Paul says, going out and actually looking for people, recruiting. He's discovering what the issues are for folks coming here. One is that we just don't have many places. We don't have much space. That's why the Ephesus Fordham area is so important, is because there's a lot of redevelopment opportunity there. Only about 120 acres, but that's a lot for Chapel Hill. In terms of the right kind of business and retail, I like to talk about retail. I actually was part in the private sector and part of developing a shopping center near Chapel Hill. And a mixed use, actually. Shopping center is the first part of it. And what you find out is you, a town or city, to get a specific business to a place, has to offer a lot, has to give a lot. And we may not want to do that. We've done one business incentive so far to get a business to stay in downtown. That was not that expensive by the standards of some places, but we will have to do some of that. But particularly, we just have to have places for people to go, and also, as many have mentioned already tonight, much simpler processes. We have to have key people in town government that make it clear to businesses how they go through the startup process of getting into Chapel Hill and getting permits and everything else.
All right. Floor's open to comments. Again, take 30 seconds for each individual one. Just a quick follow-up question. Do you think that the current town council and the town in recent years has done a good job of this already, attracting the right kind of business to Chapel Hill? Gary Kahn.
Yeah, Aaron, you know, just the point I was going to make. Past policies of the town council as far as granting office space and retail space have failed in the past, and that's why they're looking at each ordinance right now to try to increase retail space and commercial space, and I think that's what needs to be done, and change all our ordinances right now to meet those needs.
George Santiola.
Yeah, I'm going to respond to the original question. If we want more businesses, we need to increase or allow density in the areas we want businesses. In our three mixed-use areas, Southern Village, Meadowmont, and East 54, businesses are struggling. Retail businesses are struggling because there isn't enough density there to support them on a day-to-day basis. And even in our downtown, we need more office space downtown so there are people there during the day supporting those businesses. So we need density where we want businesses.
Maria Palmer.
I agree with that, and I think Chapel Hill may be the only place where the Sierra Club and the Chamber of Commerce co-sponsored a forum, and it was a great forum. And I think those their goals are not incompatible. I think we can encourage business, encourage density, and both are good for the environment and for Chapel Hill. We also need to attract partnerships like the Google partnership that the Underground in Durham has scored. I think Dwight is doing a great job, Dwight Bassett. I would like to see small business loans. There's a lot we can do.
Sally Green.
Well, the Sierra Club has been advocating a smart growth agenda for more than a decade for environmental reasons, but I wanted to talk about some things that Dwight has reported back to us, and that is what businesses want. It's kind of like what George said. They want their employees to be able to walk someplace to lunch. They want them to be able to have a robust transit system so that if they don't live in the area, which they may not be able to afford to yet, they can get there on the bus line. That's a particular kind of development that we don't have enough of. And to answer the question about the current council, no, we haven't done enough, and we're trying to play catch up after 40 years of not doing enough of this kind of work.
Follow-ups to that? Lauren Hintz.
Just one thing I want to emphasize is that I think there is confusion from new businesses about what do they have to go through to start a business up. And I think that we need to make it very clear in one place on our website and on paper what are the steps that a new business or a business which is changing has to go through.
Other comments? D.C. Swinton.
I guess I'm a little surprised that other candidates hadn't referenced just the fact that these businesses, when and if they ever do come in, that there need to be strong wages behind them. Otherwise, you're going to have a situation where we bring the business in, they don't pay a very strong wage, and then you have a continuing issue of people making the transit from Durham to Chapel Hill, increasing the commute time and pollution and otherwise.
Two hands up, Maria Palmer and then Sally Green.
I have been endorsed by the AFL-CIO in part because in my platform I put living wages. And I think I'm a strong supporter of people making enough money to support their families if they're working full time.
And Sally Green.
Well, I too have been endorsed by the AFL-CIO of North Carolina. I just wanted to say about living wages that that's a very that's a market problem, and the town of Chapel Hill does have a living wage ordinance. Our wonderful legislature just passed a law this term saying that we cannot even require our own contractors to pay a living wage, much less have any jurisdiction over any employer. So it's going to take a kind of economic change of climate for that to happen. We have no direct control over that.
Hang on to those comments, because our next question will deal closely with that. But Ed Harrison, I'll give you the last word
on this. As another endorsee of the AFL-CIO, I'll note that the living wage ordinance can only apply to town employees. Mm-hmm. We can't just randomly tell new employers what to pay their employees if we give them business incentives, because there are jobs to be generated by that as agreement. We can't have an influence there, although the General Assembly is making it a lot harder now.
For that fourth AFL-CIO endorsee, we'll give you a chance to call yourself out on that later on. Before we get to our next question, the next larger question will go to Sally Green, Amy Ryan, and Maria Palmer. Before we get to that, we've had a couple of questions come in on Twitter, so I want to turn to those right now. We'll give each of the candidates 30 seconds to answer these questions, and we'll start with D.C. Swinton and go around to Maria Palmer. This from a Twitter listener just a couple minutes ago. How do the candidates plan to attract and retain good employees who are charged with carrying through the council's directions? Again, getting very close to the topics that we've just been discussing. D.C. Swinton.
I think we do need to find a way to increase the wage for various employees, such as the transit system, whenever we do find the funding, whether it be through expanding our commercial tax base and otherwise. But we definitely need to find a way to keep them here. But just to tag on, there was no intent to require businesses that are in town to pay a living wage. It's talking about asking businesses that are coming in, what do you pay your people? Can we bring you in and you actually continue to pay those people a living wage here?
Amy Ryan.
I'd like to just give a shout out to the town employees who I've worked very closely with over this last year through Central West, and a more dedicated, hardworking bunch you can't find. I think that we're hiring very good people to make sure they stay here. I think we have to remember to say thank you when we do something. Sometimes the town, the citizens can get a little bit aggressive with the staff. So I think say thank you to a staff member who does a good job. And also I think that during difficult economic times, they went without wage increases. And I think we have to make sure that we keep their salaries competitive.
Paul Neby.
How do you retain town employees or just employees in general in Chapel Hill? The question wasn't exactly clear.
Good employees who are charged with carrying through the council's direction. So presumably town employees.
Okay. I think we need a little bit better recognition for town employees that do a great job. I just spoke to someone, it was either this week or last week, and I said, what happens when you get a good job? And they said, well, we get an email, and that's about it. Maybe there should be something on the wall, employee of the month or something like that. And, of course, the better the town is, the more people want to stay here.
Lauren Hintz.
Okay, I guess me four, since I'm the fourth person who is also endorsed by the AFL-CIO and the Central Triangle Council. But I think recognition is good. I think having been a teacher, I think a lot of people are a little bit cynical about a pat on the back about being a good person or a good employee. I think it's especially in today's market, having good benefits is one of the best ways of retaining good employees. The other thing is fair mediation. And so if there are issues, maybe there should be arbitration, but there needs to be a fair process of dealing with those problems.
Sally Green.
Well, I'll start with the last point that Lauren made, because that's really important, and we are reviewing our processes of grievances, because that has been an issue in the past couple of years, and so I look forward to improving those processes for town workers. We were able to give staff a 2% raise this year, which is not enough, but it's better than 1%, and we had I don't say that flippantly. We had a consultant who said that a 1% raise is basically not meaningful. So we had a consultant who did a very thorough job of, and my time is up.
George Santillo.
Well, like any well-run business, I think we need to improve our financial situation overall so that we can pay our employees an excellent compensation, including benefits. I believe recently we lost two police officers to the city of Cary, and that wouldn't have happened years ago. We were usually the most competitive in the triangle, but now we're losing out to other cities and towns that are prospering more than us.
Ed Harrison.
We have a council announcement period at every meeting, business meeting, and I tend to be the one who most uses it to recognize employees for what they've been doing. I think Sally's back now, and she's doing it as well. But that's something, having been a Lohu Oven employee many years ago, I remember I wasn't recognized at all except by citizens. I met citizens who thanked me for what I was doing, but the town never really did. So I'm always welcome to do that. We do have to invest in our employees to keep them from the competitors who are the Lohu governments and private sector as well.
Gary Kahn.
Yeah, it all sounds good, but the bottom line is it boils whether we can afford to pay these people or not, given what they want. And basically, I'm going back to the budget. It's going to be a very major issue coming up in the upcoming budgets, and we got to go line by line on that issue, basically. I wouldn't rush into anything at this point.
And Maria Palmer.
I think first we have to listen to our town employees, and they are the experts. Like Amy, I think we have incredible expertise and dedication, and we have to listen to them, bring fewer consultants that come in and expertly bring ideas from outside that sometimes our folks that have worked here for years know how difficult it will be to implement. So I think and of course compensate and thank them properly.
All right. We'll go in reverse order for our next Twitter question. That one, by the way, came in from Emily Dondero or Dondero. I'm butchering the name one of those two ways, but I think I got it right the other way. That question came in from Emily. This question, also via Twitter, comes in to us from Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt. So,
hey, Mark.
Be good on your answer. We'll start with Maria and go around to D.C. Are the candidates going to participate in the upcoming Chapel Hill for Youth program, and are there other non-traditional issues that we should be working on council? Maria.
I'm planning on participating if I don't have one of the 20,000 forums that we have to go. But
there are
we
only
have
19
left. Okay, so we have forwarded the invitation to our Girl Scout troop. I have forwarded the invitation all around town, and I'm very excited that the town is asking the youth and the people who work with youth what we need to be doing. I have lots of ideas, Mark, so hold on to your seat.
Gary Kahn.
As being probably the only single person and don't really have a family, chances are it's probably no.
All right. Ed Harrison.
Well, I've already gotten an evite from Mark to, I think, a pre-event. I'll have to leave my third meeting of the day to go to it, but I'll probably be in the mood to do that by then.
Yeah.
So I'll take him up on that, and I'll get to whatever my calendar lets me.
All right. George Santiola.
Yes, I hope to do so. And if those who participate in 2020 will remember that developing more activities for our youth was one of the key areas that we came up with for implementing Chapel Hill 2020.
Sally Green.
I was delighted to receive the postcard in the mail about the youth programming. It's very exciting, and I hope to get to some of it. I would like to emphasize the public library's role in that, and particularly the work that the Sacrificial Poets have already been doing with youth through the library. And we have a different kind of library. It's not just about books anymore, and it's a great space for generating that kind of youth involvement.
Lauren Hintz.
Yes, I also hope to be able to attend, and I must give a shout-out to the Park and Rec's publication, which has a lot of information about opportunities for youth to participate.
Paul Nebe.
Yes, I'm looking forward to participating. It sounds like a great idea. Looking forward to it.
Amy Ryan.
I'm looking forward to participating. I didn't get an evite, though, Mark, so if you can send my way, that would be great.
D.C. Swinton.
What was the full question again, Aaron?
Are you going to participate in Chapel Hill for Youth, and are there other non-traditional issues we should be working on?
One, I'd be happy to participate in that. And two, it's my main goal in my platform is to work on improving the safety of Chapel Hill and creating an environment that is helpful to survivors of domestic and sexual violence. We lack a domestic violence shelter in the area. We should collaborate in Carbo and Durham regarding that. We lack a child advocacy center as well, and the closest one is High Point. So there are a lot of things that we can take steps to make sure that survivors have the resources, that they will obtain justice, and make sure that they want to remain in Chapel Hill because they feel safe.
We've got one more Twitter question to get to. Before we get to it, just since Mark Kleinschmidt was the one who sent that question in, I should mention the three mayoral candidates, Mark Kleinschmidt, Lydia Lavelle, and Tom Stevens, will be appearing together in a forum here on WCHL on election eve from 3 to 4 p.m. Monday, November 4th. So tune into us for that little plug. For the next Twitter question, we'll take 15 seconds to go around the room, and we'll do this in our random order, so hang on one second. The question is, otherwise they're just all going to be in the same exact order again. The question, I just have to shuffle a little bit. So the question.
Behind you, she raised the sign that said time is up.
The question is, this is a very serious question, everyone. Okay. Who is your favorite band? And how connected are you to our local culture? And you know what? We were gonna do this randomly, but I'm gonna start with Maria Palmer because you were equally writing something down. So 15 seconds on this one.
Red Clay Ramblers. And okay. I'm sorry. What was the second
are
part
you
of that?
How connected are you to the local culture?
I go to the exhibits downtown. I don't do a whole lot of bands, but I do a lot of theater.
All right. Amy Ryan.
My favorite band these days is a band called the Cave Singers, and I'm actually a proud member of the local 506 as a result of liking them and went to see them the other day.
All right. Sally Green.
My favorite, hands down, is Django Haskins and the Old Ceremony, and I'll go see them anytime I can at the Cat's Cradle or the Saxpah Hall River Ballroom or anywhere else.
Paul Nebe.
My favorite band is Chicago. I really enjoy the local culture here, such as the Art School, Playmakers, and Memorial Theater. Those are the things I enjoy the most.
Gary Kahn.
My favorite band is the Beatles, but I know there's a group locally that's compatible with the Beatles called Rubber Soul. I like them a lot, too. And basically, on the culture side, I like everything around that Chapel has to offer. Pretty much is what I'm used to overall.
Ed Harrison.
Well, when Arcade Fire won the Grammy, I heralded it from the council table because they had got their start with Merge, mm-hmm. which was founded in Little Ridgefield neighborhood in Chapel Hill, and has now gone other places. In terms of local culture, I married someone who is just really into plays, so we start with that and we work out.
All right, George Santillo.
For band, I guess Rolling Stone, because they're one of the few that's older than me. And then for culture, I enjoy both Playmakers and the Arts Center primarily.
Lauren Hintz.
For band, I'm going to cop out and say my wife when she does violin with her friends. In terms of local culture, probably go to a lot of high school performances, plays, music, and things like that, and also local contra dances.
And D.C. Swinton.
I would say that my favorite band is Fleetwood Mac, who I got to see in 2009. Life was made.
I actually agree with you on that.
And as for culture, I am an avid contra dancer at the Carville Century Center. It'd be awesome if we could find places within town limits as well to increase the amount of contras in the area.
All right. Those were our Twitter questions. We're still taking questions on Twitter, so at WCHL is the place to go to tweet us questions. We've got one more question. This is for Amy Ryan, Maria Palmer, and Sally Green. We'll give you each 2 minutes to answer this one, and then we'll throw open the floor for 5 minutes of discussion. Something that a couple of points in here that have already been raised. One of the outcomes of Chapel Hill 2020, some of the outcomes of Chapel Hill 2020 involve a heavier reliance on consultants. Lauren Hintz has brought that up, and moved to streamline the town's advisory boards. George Cianciolo has brought that up. And also in the Ephesus Church area, the use of form-based codes, which we've talked about already. The goal of all of those is to streamline the process. One of the possible downsides that's been raised is that town council, and by extension possibly residents, have less say over what goes where. Thinking about recent debates and specific developments, keeping in mind the specific debates we're going to have in the next couple of years, what's your take on that trend? Is that something that concerns you? And if so, what should we do instead? We'll start with Amy Ryan.
I think that we have a very cumbersome development process currently in town, and I think it hinders the business development that we get. So, and it's also very expensive for the town staff and for the advisory board, the people who donate their time. So I think a streamlined process is good. I also, as somebody who has been to town council to talk about various projects, either pro or con, by the time something gets all the way to council, it's very late to have input and to have impact. So I very much advocate for getting citizen impact up front in the process to get it early on and to start those discussions earlier. So I think that that's one of the things that that's important for us to do. In terms of reliance on consultants, we have a terrific town staff, but there are things that they just, that they don't have the expertise in, they don't have the time to do. So I understand that consultants are very expensive and need to be used judiciously, but I don't know if anybody here has gone and seen the Obi Creek process yet, but we have an urban designer named Victor Dover who's working that, and he is tremendous. He is a very, very talented guy, and he's really bringing some interesting ideas. So I think people like that used judiciously can add a lot to what we as a town can do.
Maria Palmer.
I think the use of consultants needs to be curbed. Honestly, people want to live in Chapel Hill. It's a wonderful place to live and work. And we can hire some of the best in the country if we need them long term. We don't have a town architect, and we need one. And I think, yes, we can get consultants to come in and help us, but not to run the process. I think that was a mistake. And I think, I think we've learned from it, and I think we're going to do better. But, of course, it was a new thing, and we had to learn, and we have mentioned that we're going to dissect this and what lessons we could learn. I think, like Amy, that we need to get input up front, and I think that form-based code allows us to do that. If we say exactly what we want, including the setbacks and all the details, it's a compromise. If we want to attract business and develop an area like Fordham Boulevard, we need to give people the certainty that they're not going to spend 3 years and then their project's going to be nixed. So I think we're doing the right thing, exploring how we can use this judiciously in areas that need to be looked at quickly and that are not attracting lots of ideas and development opportunities. So I think we're on the right track overall. I think we need to streamline the process, and I think we have tested how to use consultants. We've learned some hard lessons, but I think implementing 2020 is moving ahead, and I think Chapel Hill will be the better for it.
Sally Green.
Getting citizen input early on development projects is a great goal. It's really very often the case that people come out at the last minute because that's when they've just heard about something. So I think we need to work on ways to get that input early. I think that consultants who are judiciously used bring a lot of value to town hall. I've had that experience with them. I think that what happened in Central West was a mismanagement, and that something went wrong somewhere, and we can fix that administrative problem. The form-based code process, I think that I hear a lot of anxiety about some notion that it will just be a form that's plopped down there on the ground. But what has been said is more true to my understanding, and that is creating what the form looks like itself is a community-driven process. And so I think that that's something we should continue to emphasize. I think that the form-based code has a great potential to work in a place like Ephesus Fordham, where once the community decides what that form wants to look like, then we're in a position to attract development. So that's my answer.
All right. Throw up on the floor for 5 minutes of discussion. Amy Ryan first.
I think I agree with many of Sally's points on form-based coding, but I still think we need to find some kind of mechanism that's not as cumbersome as what we do today for actual project review. I use the example of Pep Boys a lot when that came in. That was a project that came in. It's a built-by-right project, but they still had to go through design commission review, and honestly, that project needed it before it was going to be something that Chapel Hill wanted.
Gary Kahn?
I'm going back to Amy's thought about Victor at the Obi Creek meeting. I attended that meeting last Wednesday, and overall, people were very impressed with Victor, but the thing was, the initial plan that Roger Perry presented, the community wasn't too crazy about, but after the second present, though, that Victor did, they were much more impressed with it, and they were more favorable towards that plan. So I'm backing up pretty much what you said about Victor.
Ed Harrison?
I want to talk quickly about our cumbersome development process. I have been in development processes elsewhere, nothing like in Chapel Hill in terms of my involvement. A lot of why our process looks so difficult is so much it happens in public meetings. in somewhere like Durham, so much more has been given to staff that a lot of the difficult process is happening with staff, and they can be really difficult. And they're discovering that with form-based code in Durham is that they actually want to maybe move it back into the public process and are having to in some cases.
D.C. Swinton?
I was campaigning on Colony Woods last week, and I had a number of voters tell me that they had heard about the Ephesus Fordham plan but didn't exactly know what it entails, and that may be because of just conflicts of scheduling to go to meetings or something of that nature, or it just could be the fact that it's still too complicated for a lot of people that don't have enough time to go through all the detailed pages about what's happening. So I think in general, we need to make sure that citizens are aware of what's happening, find out their opinions, like Sally said, as soon as we can, so they aren't coming to us at the last minute with concerns.
Lauren Hintz.
2 points. First, another aspect of development is the land use management ordinance and how that's going to be revised. And then secondly, is I went to a lot of the meetings this past summer on consolidation of the boards. There's phase one and phase two. I think it's really important that if there's a reduction of the number of boards involved in development, a lot of those boards also have very important general feedback to council on a large variety of issues. And I want to make sure that feedback is not lost.
George Santillo.
Yes, I think the judicious use of consultants, the streamlined review process, and the use of form-based code can all enhance our development review process and give us the kind of development we want. I think there are issues we have to be concerned with, but I want to go back to something Sally said a while back, and I think oftentimes there's too much negativity about what's going on in Chapel Hill, and instead of looking at the positive and being optimistic and saying we can do it better than the other people have done it, we tend to focus on the negative aspects instead of thinking about how we can do it that much better.
Follow-ups? All right. We're going to move ahead to one more lightning round. I will ask several questions. I have three, but we got a couple more via Twitter, so we will continue to ask those as well. And again, at WCHL is our Twitter handle if you want to send us questions in the next 20 minutes. Each candidate will have 30 seconds each to respond, and this will be drawn in random order. This one from Twitter, from a listener on Twitter, Penny Rich, in fact. If elected, how do you plan to patch the relationship with county government that has been strained in the last 4 to 5 years? Gary Kahn first.
I know Penny very well, and I probably could work with her if elected to town council. I think there needs to be a greater dialogue between the Board of Commissioners, the County Commissioners, and the town of Chapel Hill. I think that's kind of lacking right now. Okay, my time is up.
Amy Ryan.
I think Ed had mentioned recently there's been some personnel changes over in county government that I think may help improve relations there.
George Santillo.
I think we have more social hours between the county and the council.
Anything in particular?
No, but I could think of some off mic.
All right, Paul Neeby.
I think we all want what's best for the county and the city, and we just need to get together and talk.
Maria Palmer.
I think the personnel changes will help, and I have a great confidence in our ability to work out issues together. And I second the motion of having more social time.
Anywhere in particular?
My house is fine.
Okay.
Everybody can come.
Sally Green.
More face-to-face time among elected officials would definitely help, and I know Penny well, and glad she's there. I have I experienced this with the library negotiation. Once several council members and several commissioners got in the room, it was a very reasonable conversation, and we got a result that mattered.
D.C. Swinton.
I think increasing dialogue is key. We may meet weekly now, or we may not. But if we don't, we definitely should, and increase those meetings as we go along, trying to restore that relationship, and so we can make the town and county a much better place.
Lauren Hintz.
I think it's just really important to see the different demands which are on the county commissioners as opposed to the Chapel Hill Council and the Carver Alderman, and just taking, you know, be very well aware of the differences those different government agencies have to deal with.
Ed Harrison.
Well, as Penny well knows, the one single personnel change at the county makes a lot of difference in terms of dealing with our town staff. I think the commissioners and the council members, when we get time together, we work well together. We don't get much of it. I try to stay in touch by phone, particularly.
We got a little bit of time, just a couple follow-up questions to that, and throw open the floor for anyone who wants to take 30 seconds. First of all, would you agree that the relationship between town and county currently is, in fact, strained? And secondly, what are the obstacles to increasing dialogue, if any? George Santillo.
I think it was strained, but I think it's dramatically improving with some of the changes that have occurred out at the county level.
Sally Green nodding her head. Any others? All right. This question also coming to us from Twitter, Valerie Schultz. Thank you for your question. Again, 30 seconds for your answer, and we'll draw them randomly. Homeless situation. It's getting out of hand. It's difficult as a young woman to feel safe downtown. What should be done? And specifically, what should be done by the town council? Beginning with D.C. Swinton.
Well, this is certainly a concern for me. I think that when we speak about the homeless population, we speak about them in a very negative light. The issue at hand is that they are homeless because of the lack of opportunities, the lack of mental health opportunities to get them, if they are having issues in that regard, to find ways to be able to put them somewhere, to help them, and then get them on track to be able to find work. If we actually do that, then there will be a smaller homeless population, and therefore a perceived idea of greater safety.
Amy Ryan.
I agree with DC's analysis. I also think more education for the public into things like panhandling ordinances and things that are allowed and things that are acceptable in town would be a good idea.
Maria Palmer.
I don't think that the biggest threat comes from the homeless, the folks that have suffered serious injury, murder. Those issues were not caused by homeless people, so I think there's a misperception there. But we do need community policing, a bigger crisis unit in our police department. I volunteered with Project Connect and know that there are a lot of folks working to end homelessness, and people on the council are working on this. I look forward to making a contribution.
Lauren Hintz.
I'm sorry that this perception that women feel unsafe because of the homeless downtown. I agree with Maria Palmer. I think it's misplaced fear, but if it's the reality, then education and helping at a homeless shelter or elsewhere might change attitudes.
Ed Harrison.
Well, from a perspective of 12 years in the council, I've liked all the answers so far. I'll say education of the public is important. We do need to know that the people who are harassing our Twitter feed are people who are probably in a lot of pain, and we need to work on getting them happier in home and in homes.
Paul Niebe.
I think we need to figure out how to help the homeless, support the organizations that are helping the homeless, such as IFC. And the other organizations.
George Santillo.
Well, I'd like to talk about a program that Donna Bell suggested to me, and that's one to have downtown ambassadors, people who would stroll downtown and help the citizens, but also would have interaction with the homeless people. I think a lot of the problems with the homeless people, they become sometimes hard and harsh because people ignore them. They act like they don't exist there. And I think having people strolling the downtown as ambassadors to both the visitors and to the people on the street might help soften the situation.
Gary Kahn.
I'm very familiar with the process because homeless people are, I understand the person's question. Homeless people, some of them are dangerous. And an example of this, I recently was in University Mall, and there are a couple of homeless people there, and there was a woman who was concerned about it. She actually reported to the guard, and the response was, unless the guy really does something bad, we can't do anything about it. And I think that's a major issue. So I have deep sympathy with the woman's question. We need to do something. And one of the suggestions is either finding a place like a synagogue or a church, you know, to help shelter them.
Sally Green.
Well, I too have deep sympathy with the woman's predicament, and I wish that she had been able to be at the last meeting of the Orange County Partnership to End Homelessness when we had Chief Blue and a couple of social workers and some of the street outreach workers who do work on Franklin Street there to talk about this issue. It's much more complicated than I have 15 seconds to tell you for. But in short, this won't help probably with how the woman feels, but the numbers don't bear her out. The problem is really not worse right now, but I understand that she feels uncomfortable.
Anyone want to follow up on that with additional questions? And just an additional follow-up over and above the problem of homelessness, what about the problem generally of public safety downtown? Is there anything that can be done about that? D.C. Swinton first.
I just wanted to touch base on just the, as Sally said, the frequency of homeless persons being the perpetrators of some sort of violence is very small, so we have to take away that stigma from homelessness. But I do feel that the young woman's feelings are valid. In terms of feeling any sort of fear, whether it be from homeless persons or anyone else downtown. And that's something we have to deal with, too. It's not just homeless people. It's any given citizen in Chapel Hill. If they don't feel safe, then we have a problem, and we have to find ways to do it.
Maria Palmer first.
I think we need to work closely with the university. There is a lot of date rape, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed jointly, and education will be key. But also the university already knows it has a problem dealing with this. And I think the new chancellor is going to have to step up and work with the city to on this issue.
Gary Kahn.
I totally disagree with D.C. I come from a city, and there's a lot of homeless people there. And they initially have attacked people just walking on the street. So I think your attitude on the homeless people is totally off base. I have to disagree with you.
No. The statistics on who is attacking whom in Chapel Hill and other places is that the homeless are more often victimized than they are the perpetrators.
You have to prove that to me. You have to prove that.
There are numbers that can prove that.
Hang on. Lauren Hintz.
If the focus is downtown safety, I think that's one situation where increased foot patrols by police, Chapel Hill police, and also collaboration from the UNC campus police would be very helpful.
And Maria Palmer, I think you had?
No.
I was
just thanking Sally for her comment.
Other comments? Ed Harrison.
Okay. One thing to know about downtown Chapel Hill is there are about as many pedestrians on the street in a small area as there are anywhere in the Carolinas. We have 15,000 people crossing the street at Columbia and Franklin every day, and they're back on the sidewalk. So we have a lot of activity, a lot of chances for confrontation if that happens. And so the numbers may be skewed compared to other places in the state and the world because we have so many people with whom things can happen.
And D.C. Swinton, I'll let you have the last word.
My best example, Gary, is when it comes to sexual violence, you're going to more than likely be assaulted by someone you know, or in the case of UNC, you're more than likely to be assaulted by a student, not some random stranger who happens to be homeless on the our Chapel Hill streets. So I think it's very paramount that we stop putting homeless persons down and figure out why they are there in the first place. If we actually create a system that keeps people from being homeless, then this perception that the homeless are dangerous will go away, and we'll be able to figure that out if we work together.
We've only got a few minutes left. We've got two more questions to get to. So for the next question, we'll go around from Sally to George. I'll ask this question. Each candidate will have 30 seconds each to respond. One of the biggest development questions in the next few years is going to be Obie Creek. The original proposal involves more than 1 million square feet, about the same footprint by some estimates as South Point Mall. As a member of town council, what would you look for in a final proposal, and what concessions, if any, would you ask from the developer? Beginning with Sally.
It's way too early to answer that question. We've set up a development agreement process that we deliberately, as a result of citizen requests, broke into two parts, and we are still in the first part of it, which is the part that leads up to actually deciding whether to go through a development approval process at all. I very much look forward to the community conversation.
Lauren Hintz.
The impact on traffic in the entire region, the usage of the property, the impact of stormwater, those would be just a few of the issues I'd be looking at.
Paul Nieby.
I think when we're talking about Obie Creek, we need to think about traffic mitigation and work with Chatham County on some alternate road because Obie Creek will increase traffic, unfortunately. We also need to complement Southern Village
so that they work together as a complementary and are joined somehow.
Amy Ryan.
A little while ago, I complimented Victor Dover on his work on the project, and I think in a way he's made it more complicated because he's gone and presented this really interesting new place that I'm not sure really fits into the site. So I think that we need to take a step back. Other people have mentioned traffic issues, which I think are important, and whether this fits into the context, how it will affect Southern Village, whether it will benefit or not. So I think we have to back up a little bit and ask those questions before we start saying, is this a project we like?
D.C. Swinton.
I would love to see the developers include mixed-income housing, mixed-income neighborhoods. I feel like as we continue to develop, we can't forget about the low-income communities as or population that we have in the town. And so any development we make, we need to encourage those developers to include things that are affordable to low-income citizens and for students that are on the verge of graduating and want to stay in Chapel Hill.
Maria Palmer.
I would look at the impact on the environment and how the development is going to be environmentally sound, and I would look at connectivity and how it is it allows people to use public transit or get around through bikeways and pedestrian connectors, and those would be two big questions as we go through the process.
Gary Kahn.
As the only person who lives in Southern Village, it affects me the most. And the truth of the matter is that the second plan that Amy was talking about with Victor was pretty much approved. But the way the process works is they're going to be presented to the town council. And if the town council and the community like it, they may get the go-ahead, but it's not the final version right now. So it is very early in the process right now.
Ed Harrison.
Well, I was in the mayor's seat the evening that the council split the development process into two parts and moved towards setting up a compass committee for Obie Creek. I'd been working with the manager since that afternoon to do that because it was clear what I heard from people is they wanted much more deliberate process, and I'm looking to the compass committee for recommendations on what you're bringing up. I think it's too early to say otherwise.
George Santiello?
I agree with both Sally and Ed. I think the compass committee has been working very well. It seems to be a well-balanced committee. And there's been a lot of civility in their discussions, and I think I'd like to let them go forward and see what they come up with before we make any decisions.
All right, we've got time for one more yes or no question before our brief closing statements. This one comes to us via Twitter, via Lauren Eastham, actually, who is stepping down from town council at the end of this year. We'll go around the room. Purely a yes or no question. Is there a desire of candidates to consider funding for a unique Chapel Hill museum? George Santiello.
Yes, I would like to see a unique Chapel Hill museum.
Ed Harrison.
Yes, not the museum we had before, though.
Gary Kahn.
Yes, but I'd like to see the development plans, what it would entail.
Maria Palmer.
No.
D.C. Swinton.
If it involves giving the town revenue, yes.
Amy Ryan.
If the town could afford it, yes.
Paul Nieby.
Yes, as long as it doesn't take away from the other requirements of the town.
Lauren Hintz?
Yes.
And Sally Green?
No, I think it should be privately funded.
All right, and finally, we'll take just 20 seconds each to answer this final question, and we'll go in reverse order from Sally around to George. Last question, what is the one issue that we haven't mentioned in all of this discussion that you think ought to be discussed? Sally Green.
Well, I would have said homelessness, but that came up with the questioner. Mm-hmm. We haven't discussed the future, the IFC and the transition to the transitional housing as opposed to emergency shelter, and that's a conversation the community needs to have.
Lauren Hintz.
We haven't really discussed stormwater.
All right. Paul Nieby.
I think it's been a pretty thorough discussion.
Amy Ryan. That's my favorite answer so far, by the way.
The one thing we haven't discussed is comprehensive planning in town. Right now, our future focus areas are very specific, but they're kind of siloed, so I think we need to find a way to pull that all together.
D.C. Swinton.
We haven't discussed, like Lauren said, issues with stormwater management, sustainable infrastructure in general, and I feel like this homelessness issue would be good to expand upon in future forums and otherwise.
Maria Palmer.
I think our collaboration with the school system, we have police officers there that I think are contributing to the school-to-prison pipeline, and I think there are many issues that the town needs to look into.
Gary Kahn?
There are some political issues that have come up during this campaign, and I think it should boil down to is take the current campaign of the possible town council makeup and look at each one of the candidates and why and reasons why they think the way they think. I could be more specific if you want me to, but I don't know whether that's appropriate or not.
Ed Harrison?
We haven't mentioned environmental planning. It's my profession. I've done a lot of it in my 12 years on council, and there's a lot more to do.
And George Santiello, last word.
Well, we've mentioned homeless, but we haven't discussed who should be responsible for taking care of the homeless. Should it be the town, the county, or the state, or all three?
And that concludes our 2013 Chapel Hill Carborough Candidates Forum. Thanks again to George Santiolo, Sally Green, Ed Harrison, Lauren Hintz, Gary Kahn, Paul Nebe, Maria Palmer, Amy Ryan, and D.C. Swinton. Wish we had two more hours. Early voting begins on Thursday, October 17th in Orange County. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th. Visit our website, chapelboro.com/electioncentral, for all the latest on elections. This is Aaron Keck. Thanks again to all the candidates, Anthony Wellman, Alex Curley back in the production studio, Barry Leffler, Elizabeth Friend, Lauren Stafford, and everyone who made this possible. This has been our Chapel Hill Town Council Candidates Forum. Good night.